Hi, and welcome to the Homeopathy Health Show. I'm Atiq Ahmadbhatti, a fourth-generation homeopath with over 20 years of professional practice in this field of healing. In the Homeopathy Health Show, I'll be talking all things homeopathy and natural, with guest interviews, tips and advice, and answering some of your questions. Homeopathy is truly a unique complementary system of healing, suitable for all ages, young and old. I'd love to hear from you and welcome your questions on homeopathy and how it can or has helped you. Feel free to email me at health@liketreatslike.co.uk or visit online at www.liketreatslike.co.uk. So let's begin today's show here on UK Health Radio, the world's number one talk health radio. Hi everyone, it's great to be back. I hope you're all doing well and in good health. I've got another packed show for you today, and we'll be providing part one of a special series on the history and development of homeopathy, which I'm quite sure you're going to really enjoy and learn a great deal from. Later in the show, I'll also be joined by my special guest, James Fernley of Nature's Laboratory, for part two of the interview on propolis and its amazing benefits for immune support. And we'll also feature time for reflection. So let's begin today's show with part one of a special series that I have for you on the history and development of homeopathy. Now, homeopathy was founded by the German physician Dr. Christian Friedrich Samuel Hahnemann, and I'd like to start off this part of the history with actually a quotation from Samuel Hahnemann's book, which is called The Organon of the Medical Art. The quotation may not initially make sense, but as we go through the history, we will refer to it, and it will make more and more sense. And it is very beautifully said. And I quote, "My sense of duty would not easily allow me to treat the unknown pathological state of my suffering brethren with these unknown medicines. The thought of becoming in this way a murderer or malefactor towards the life of my fellow human beings was most terrible to me, so terrible and disturbing that I wholly gave up my practice in the first years of my married life and occupied myself solely with chemistry and writing." So that's a very powerful statement by Dr. Hahnemann at that time, who was a medical physician, who became very disillusioned by the state of the practice, you know, during those times itself. So remember, we're talking the 18th, 19th century here. So as far as homeopathy is concerned, the basic principle of homeopathy is like cures like, or like treats like. And this was actually recognized by Hippocrates as early as the 5th century. But it was the German physician, Dr. Christian Friedrich Samuel Hahnemann, who is actually credited with its development as a viable medical practice. Homeopathy was founded by Dr. Hahnemann. He himself was born in Saxony in 1755. Now, as a person, Dr. Hahnemann, he loved to learn languages, and in fact, he obtained proficiency in 8 of them, which is actually quite remarkable indeed. And at the age of 12, he had started teaching Greek. Thus, he became a language teacher at a very young age. Dr. Hahnemann began his medical studies in Leipzig in Austria, and then he went to Vienna and Erlangen. And in 1779, he became a qualified medical doctor and actually started practicing in Dresden. Now, Dr. Hahnemann was an extremely kind-hearted doctor, and naturally his income was not much at that time. So what he started to do was to translate books into other languages in order to supplement his income. However, he became disenchanted with what he saw as barbaric medical practices in the 18th century. Hahnemann came across a book which was called A Treatise on Materia, which was published by Dr. Edward Cullen, in which Dr. Cullen stated that quinine was an effective treatment for malaria. Naturally, Hahnemann, with a very inquisitive mind, certainly, investigated the effects of quinine on himself and his friends, and he found that in a healthy person, quinine produced the same symptoms as the disease itself, as in the disease of malaria, meaning fever, sweating, and shivering, whereas in an ill person it appeared to act as a cure. So, over a long period of time, Dr. Heinemann tested these many different substances, which included animal, vegetable, and mineral, and he tested these on himself, and very meticulously he noted down the symptoms that were produced, forming many drug pictures. And you'll remember that in one of the episodes I referred to the homeopathic practitioners, we all use something called a materia medica. And we also spoke about each remedy having a digital signature for healing. So these drug pictures I can refer to as digital signatures. Now, to test his remedies on ill people, he questioned his patients closely to build up a similar picture of their symptoms that he could then match to the relevant drug picture. So he would ask people what they had been through, the symptoms they were suffering, very meticulously, you know, starting from the head to the toes. And then this would then form a drug picture, and then he would match this according to his notes, which corresponded to a certain remedy that he had tested, which had similar symptoms. And so it happened that he discovered that the closer the match, the more successful the treatment, meaning like cures like, or like treats like, which then became the first principle of homeopathy.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Nagging pain. We at Alka-Seltz know that a small amount of the patient's own bone marrow and blood cells can treat many painful conditions with regenerative orthopedic therapy. This is an attractive treatment option for painful joints, back pain, sports injuries, and many other conditions. It may avoid the need for surgery altogether. Alka-Seltz, part of a network of 50 RegenX clinics worldwide, where over 60,000 patients have been treated and helped. Alka-Seltz. Life is more beautiful with less pain.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
The station that makes you feel good.
Now, many substances that Dr. Heinemann used were highly poisonous, and to ensure their safety, he developed a three-stage dilution and mixing process, which was called succussion, which is called succussion. Heinemann believed that this process of dilution allowed the remedies to act on the disease itself, while leaving alone the organs of the body. In a process where the remedy, due to having its coarseness removed through dilution, acts only on the nerves, meaning the part of the body closest to the soul. This is actually a very important point here, because Heinemann himself was an extremely God-fearing person, very humble, as I have already mentioned, and very compassionate indeed. And he had a genuine love and desire to help those who were suffering from any kind of health complaint. Now, by repeated dilution and succussion, Heinemann found that the more times a remedy had been diluted, the faster and actually more effective it worked. This process of dilution formed the second principle of homeopathy. By extreme dilution, the medicine's curative properties are enhanced, and all the poisonous or undesirable side effects are lost. Dr. Heinemann believed that disease and illness is transmitted by a dynamic force, as explained in the quote from his Materia Medica Pura. I quote, "What is dynamic influence, dynamic force? We see that Earth causes the moon to revolve around it, by some invisible mysterious force, and that the moon, in its turn, produces in the ocean at regular intervals alternating tides of ebb and flow. A magnet powerfully attracts a piece of iron or steel near it in a similar way. The invisible force of the magnet does not need any mechanical or material means, such as a hook or lever. It attracts the iron or a steel needle by its own pure, non-material, invisible, spirit-like force. We have here a dynamic phenomenon. In a similar way, a child who has smallpox or measles will transmit them to a healthy child by approaching him, even without touching him. This contamination takes place invisibly, dynamically, he says, at a distance, with no more transmission of any material particle from one to the other than from the magnet to the steel needle. A specific spirit-like influence communicates smallpox or measles to the child nearby, just as the magnet communicates magnetic force to the needle, Dr. Samuel Hahnemann. Now, he further explained in his book, The Organon of the Medical Art, this remarkable transformation of the properties of natural bodies through the mechanical action of trituration and succussion on their particles, whilst these particles are diffused in an inert, dry or liquid substance, develops the latent dynamic powers previously imperceptible and, as it were, lying hidden asleep in them. These powers electively affect the vital principle of animal life. Hahnemann then said, this process is called dynamization or potentization, development of the medicinal power, and it creates what we called dynamizations or potencies of different degrees. Now, after 11 years of medical practice, he discovered the homeopathic system of treatment. And during his research, Hahnemann discovered that people varied in their responses to each remedy depending on their basic temperament. So, homeopathy concentrates on treating the whole patient holistically rather than the disease. And this, in fact, became the third principle of homeopathy. Dr. Hahnemann described this principle by using a Latin phrase, similia similibus curantur, which means let like cure like. He named this new method of healing homeopathy after the Greek words homeo, meaning similar, and pathy, meaning suffering. Now, in 1796, for the first time, he informed the medical world about homeopathic philosophy through the medical journals, and in 1810, he published his famous book, The Organon of Rational Medicine, also called Organon of Hahnemann, and then he prepared the Materia Medica between the years of 1811 and 1821. So that was part one of the history and development of homeopathy. I hope you found that interesting, and part two will follow in the next show. Hi, this is Atik from the Homeopathy Health Show. I'm here to help and support you in your health and wellness journey, to answer your questions on everything homeopathy and much more. To get in touch, contact me via my email, health@liketreatslike.co.uk, or visit online at www.liketreatslike.co.uk. You can also find me on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram by searching for Like Treats Like. Or just visit UK Health Radio online and you'll find my contact information under the Presenters tab. Homeopathy is a wonderful natural complementary system of healing, so let's work together for your health, wellness and vitality.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
Now, last week, we spoke to James Fernley, who's the founder and CEO of Nature's Laboratory, whose mission is to develop sustainable and effective natural medicines for the 21st century. James has an incredible work experience and has done a considerable amount of work in promoting the healing benefits and qualities of propolis. So I'm delighted to welcome James back to the show. James, welcome to the Homeopathy Health Show.
Well, thank you, Atik. It's great to be back talking to you.
Likewise, certainly. We had a very fascinating conversation last week, and I wanted to actually carry that on for the listeners. But I think you have a story to share with us first, don't you?
Yeah, and in a way it does. In a way, it kind of follows on from our conversation last time about how things happen in the way they do. But you might remember that I told you about my aspirations to be a doctor, primarily because of watching my mother suffer and dying very young and not really feeling I was equipped to do anything about it. But shortly after that, I became quite ill myself. I had something growing in the middle of my chest, and I didn't know what to do about it. I went to the Orthodox doctor, and the doctor told me, "Oh no, you're imagining it." Eventually, when it was about the size of an apple, right in the middle of my chest, he did say, "Oh well, we better send you to the a consultant." So I went to the consultant. And I was first of all a bit shocked by the fact that the consultant was the same consultant who'd worked with my mother,
right?
And his name was Merlin.
Okay.
So eventually he said, "Well, you better come in and we'll do a biopsy." And I was worried about this because my other concern was, you know, that once you start cutting into, if it's become cancer, once you start cutting into a cancer, that's a pretty good way of actually spreading it. So so I decided to look in the yellow pages for anything wacky, anything that I thought. And, you know, I came across this guy who was something called a homeopath. And I thought, well, I wonder what that is. So I rang him, and I eventually went to see him, and he gave me a remedy, which was Nat Muir, and about 2 or 3 days later, a hole appeared in my chest, and out poured pints and pints of pus. It must have been some kind of abscess or something. And that went on. That was my Achilles heel for maybe 2 or 3 years. But it obviously was the kind of repository of my unhappiness. And I found out quite recently that Nat Muir is a substance that is given for long-standing or unresolved grief.
Absolutely.
So here we are. You know, I think the mystery is that I felt myself in a place where I'd nowhere to go. And at that point, something directed me to a solution which opened up a new door for me. And I think in a way this is part of both the curse and the blessing of health. So we tend to think of it as a very negative thing, where in fact it's your body seeking answers. It's your body, in a way, also it's your being seeking a way out. I mean, the best example being the guy who has the heart attack after working, you know, 24 hours a day, and then realizes that it can't go on, and is able to change his life. Well, dis-ease in so many ways is always helping us to do that.
It really is fascinating talking to you, because we have so much in common here. What's really interesting is that that link of mind, body, and spirit is real. It's not just, for want of a better word, something you use, you know, wacky. It's not something that's just made up. There is a link. Sometimes you go to a physician for help, or maybe not non-medical either. You just go and ask somebody for help. And depending on their response, you know, it can boost your morale, it can lift you up, it lift your spirits, you know, give this whole positive mental attitude. Whereas sometimes where that help is not sought, or if you're at a visiting a physician and you know it's not as you expected, it can really drop your mood. Very much like the immune system. How many people, God forbid, who've had, you know, that phone call at night where someone may have passed away, or some other shocking news, and then they find the next few days, you know, they end up catching a cold or a sore throat. You know, where's that link? You know, it's the shock which then affects the body, which then manifests as physical symptoms. Don't you agree?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I've taken, because propolis in a sense is so much related to the bees' immune system. It is the bees, the beehive's natural immune system. I've really thought a lot, in a way, not as a scientist, but just kind of following my sense about things, about what our immune system is. And you know, in terms of that reference to Hippocrates and the art of medicine, and the physical, the social, and the spiritual combination of definition of medicine. It strikes me that we know our immune system plummets if we have a physical trauma. If we have a social or emotional trauma, our immune system goes down. If we lose a close friend or a parent or someone we are dear to. But so it goes down in a social context, but it also goes down in a spiritual or an existential context. If we feel we have no reason to live, if we feel we have no purpose in the world, if we have no meaning in the world, then our immune system plummets. So where does that leave our concepts of what our immune system is? It cannot be something that is treatable by. You can't treat a three-dimensional substance with a one-dimensional substance, you know, which brings us back to your point, Atik, you know, that the immune system is the immune system, I think, is the key to our understanding. I think for things like propolis, what we're doing is we're creating immune support medicines. We need to put it the other way around. Propolis is not the answer to everything, you know, but it's a very powerful natural support for our physical body because of its nature. So, a very powerful support for our immune defenses. It's not a magic bullet, but it's a very powerful component in a very complex pattern of relatedness in development, if you like.
Absolutely. But also it's fascinating, isn't it, that, and it's a fact that we see it all around, and certainly we're also part of it, living in a connected world with technology, surrounded by technology, surrounded by phone masts, surrounded by, you know, class it as geomagnetic or geopathic stress. The cells, the vibration of the cells are not doing us any good. They're certainly not doing the immune system any good. And it's always, you know, and no pun intended, we have to now make time, for our own time. You know, you have to think about, when can I have an opportunity to have my own space and time? And sadly, for the majority of people, it's very, very difficult. Perhaps once a month, perhaps it's, you know, every 6 months. Some people, for example, who were in the habit of going to holidays local abroad, are finding that gone 3, 4, 5, 6 years, because life is becoming so hectic. There's always so much to do, even when there probably isn't so much to do. The body is so used to just thinking of something to do. And then when you don't have anything to do, you almost feel guilty that, oh, am I being lazy? Am I procrastinating? Am I, what's wrong with me? It's actually, there is nothing wrong.
That I but this is the disease of our time, isn't it? And I'm inclined not to think of it as a kind of as the end of something, although I think we are at the end of something. My favorite metaphor being the caterpillar and the and the butterfly. I mean, I think we have been a fine example of a caterpillar, but we've reached the end of that process. And in a way, our artificial intelligence and our virtual reality existences have, so to speak, emphasized and re-emphasized our intellect beyond our capacity to experience. It's almost like we're living in a Faraday cage, and the impulses from other human beings in terms of relationships and the influence of the, shall we put it, the existential world, or shall I use that the S word, the spiritual, shall we say, they can't get in. They can't inform us. They can't, so to speak, support our intelligence with an element of direction and purpose and confidence. So we're living in a construct of ourselves, which eventually will simply implode. And I think this is part of the metamorphic process. It has to do. And you know, it's good, and of course it's, but it's like medicine. There are various things that will keep us alive for a period, but do we want to be kept alive in this way?
Everybody's highly strung, don't you think? Everybody's. I find, especially with the situation nowadays, certainly with the cost of living crisis and whatnot, also. Immune systems are impacted because the nervous system is impacted and people are always on edge. And sometimes, you know, all it needs is, it's actually what you mentioned right at the start in last week's, when we were having last week's discussion, which was going back to nature and being, trying to be at peace, finding yourself and grounding yourself. Simplicity is probably the best medicine, but wanting and greed is certainly not going to help us, because it's an unachievable goal. If it happens, fantastic. If it doesn't, it shouldn't get us into this state that, oh, why me? It doesn't work that way. Life doesn't work that way. You know, it's about making the best that you can, being comfortable and being simple, to be honest.
Yeah.
And this actually brings us back to propolis, something so unique from the beauty of the bee. I wanted to talk to you about the benefits of propolis, actually, as a natural form of medicine. And what's your experiences with this? I know that you have founded the ARC, ARC, which is the Apiceutical Research Center, and also the International Propolis Research Group. So I know that there is an incredible amount of research and work going into this incredible substance.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you how that the apiceutical research, because I started that 10 or 11 years ago now, and it came at a point, and it's another interesting phenomenon. I also it was a time when I wasn't very well. It was a time when I was really struggling to keep the business that I was involved in afloat. I've been also at the same time trying to develop all this research up at the University of Strathclyde, and I decided that I thought maybe I'd had enough. I was ready to throw the towel in, and I thought I'll just have one last trip to the University of Strathclyde and talk it over with the guy that I've been working with for many years, Dr. Dave Watson, who had become a friend, and just see what he thought about it. When I got there, Dave had set up a meeting with six of his colleagues, two lecturers, and the rest as PhD students and master students. And they did a presentation for me of all the work they'd been doing about propolis. And it included a piece of work where they looked at some propolis that I had collected from South Cameroon in an area where there was sleeping sickness in the population.
Right.
Now, earlier on, I mean, several years before this, we'd funded a PhD at Strathclyde, and that PhD had shown that propolis in subtropical areas contained more phenolic compounds and was, as a result, more antimicrobial. And propolis collected from temperate zones contained more flavonoids and was more antioxidant or anti-inflammatory.
Okay.
So this bit of information about the sleeping sickness, we found inside this propolis, where there was sleeping sickness in the population, there was also an anti-trypanosome chemical in the propolis. So it kind of just dawned on me that here, what the bee is doing is collecting the sort of immune support, the immune signature, the immunity signature of the ecological context in which it found itself, by collecting the resins, by collecting the bees, the plants, and taking it back to the hive, processing some of those chemicals through its enzymatic system and using it as its immune system. And inside it, we found in that center an anti-trypanosome chemical. So it struck me that, you know, and this is what really excites me about propolis, that what we have is in the beehive and in the honeybee, we have a flying pharmacist. We have something that is taking the undoubted value, specific value of, if you like, herbal medicine, and bringing that together and elevating it to a higher status. And given the fact that, and here's the non-scientist speaking, given the fact that the temperature inside a beehive is very close to our body temperature, this is why I believe that propolis is so valuable for the human being as a substance. So what lived in me, when I traveled back on the train from Glasgow, I wrote down a project which I called Bee Farmer Africa. Right. I thought we need to get to Africa. We need to look at the relationship between the propolis which bees collect in areas where there are specific diseases, because my hunch was, my certainty was actually, is that the propolis that a bee collects is directly related to the ecological involvement of human beings in that context. So the best propolis, you know, which links in with the folk aspect, which is, you know, eat local vegetables, use local honey, use local pollen, you know, it links into the fact that you are related to what surrounds you. And so the concept of geographical medicine was developed into this bee farmer Africa, looking for ways in which we could bring government agencies, health practitioners, beekeepers, to try and understand the chemical composition of local propolis in relation to the local demographic picture of health in those regions. And so eventually we did it. My son Hugo got a Churchill fellowship and went and visited five African countries and collected a lot of data, which we're still working on. But the idea of the relationship of propolis to specific disease, in a way, did two things. It reinvigorated my enthusiasm, and it was at that point that I formed the Epiceutical Research Center to do two things. One was to look at this relationship between chemistry, biology, and human disease features. And secondly, to look at ways in which we can understand the how to sustainable beekeeping practices, because if this is the kind of medicine that I think it is, we're going to have to look after the bees a great deal better, and we're going to have to understand, you know, what our relationship is with the honeybee in a much deeper way, and respect that relationship, so we don't end up sort of pillaging the resources of the honeybee for our you know, medicinal or food requirements.
That is actually really, I mean, I'm just, you caught me, you know, I'm fascinated. That's an eye opener, that what you've just been talking about, as far as, you know, geographical medicine, the immune signature. But it's amazing, you know. I'm so interested. I'm so excited as well. I can just well imagine how obviously excited you are about this. But you know, you talk about geographical medicine. So have there been any tests or trials or uses of honey or propolis locally to see the results? Certainly, I know that it's a very basic example, but for the last 15 years, certainly, my family, we all use honey, which is produced locally. And yeah, we use that as a replacement to sugar. And yeah, it's brilliant. It really, yeah, really is good. And it tastes great once you've got a taste of honey, for example. Is it, I mean, where are we with propolis? And
yeah. Well, just to stay on the honey front for a bit, and I think when we talk about honey, I think we have to imagine that we're talking about a story which is very, very similar to all the bee products, actually. But if you think about honey and you think about what's happened with Manuka honey, and people like Professor Peter Molan in New Zealand, and who has developed all these wound healing products related to honey, all honey is antibacterial because of its peroxide quality. All honey is antibacterial, and we're working on trying to do some research with heather honey, for instance, which I think is not a dissimilar plant and probably contains similar, you know, because when you're collecting the honey, you remember that those chemicals which are related to propolis are very close to it because they're in the walls of the cells, because propolis is used to strengthen the cell walls and also used to cap the cells. So propolis and honey are very closely related. So and I think you know, there's now an increasing amount of, there's some research at the University of Birmingham just came out talking about almost as a revolution, they think, you know, on the antibacterial properties of honey. It's all antibacterial, you know. It's just that it's now being converted into medical language and scientific language, and people say, "Oh, this is interesting," you know. But in as far as propolis is concerned, the issue of locating specific disease control capacities, like is it good for X, Y, or Z, and relating that to locality and geography is, of course, very, very complex piece of research.
Absolutely.
And but I think it's proven that the propolis has different biological properties in different geographic zones, and we are doing some very interesting in our lab at Nature's Laboratory, very interesting work on collating propolis research worldwide using some statistical programming tools to try and correlate, try and find sort of meta patterns in the relationship between, if you like, cause and effect, between chemistry and biology. But of course, most of it is between chemistry and biology. It's not between clinical effect. And there's another equation because as we've just said, clinical effect also depends on the terrain, doesn't it, as we would probably both agree about. It depends on the context in which the substance is being put. So that's a difficult, but I mean, some colleagues of ours in Italy have just published a paper on the use of propolis in treating upper respiratory tract infections, a very useful bit of research in time of COVID. And they have used propolis with a particular kind of phenolic composition, and proved clearly in clinical trials its ability to help with the physical condition. Equally, there was at the last International Propolis Research Group conference, which I might just talk about in a bit in a minute. Another colleague, Dr. Andressa Barreta from Brazil, spoke about research they had done with COVID patients. This is clinical research, work they'd done with COVID patients to show that the combination of propolis with orthodox drugs reduce the hospitalization time for COVID patients by half.
That's fascinating. That really is.
Clinical work is being done now. And it's being done, I think, Atik, because there's a need.
Yeah.
And because we're at a bit of a dead end with the alternatives.
I do know that in next week, certainly, or the week after, we'll be talking again about propolis and, you know, antibiotic resistance, for example. Mm. But as far as today is concerned and the research, if our listeners want to find out more information, where should they go?
Well, the International Propolis Research Group, which was set up in 2016, has run international conferences every year since then. Because of COVID, the last two conferences have been online, and one of the real beauties of the online version is that every talk is recorded,
right?
And members of the public can go onto that website, which is iprg.info, and they can take a look at all the papers, including the presentations that I've given, which generally speaking have a more, you know, a wider look at how propolis can help and how it fits in as a medicine. They can see all those reports. So there's a huge body of research now. I think there's something like, let me see, there's probably about 40 or 50 academic research papers on propolis there.
James, it's been an absolute honour. It's so much knowledge that you've imparted today. It's absolutely been fascinating. I can't express enough. My interest has gone up, tenfold in propolis itself. And there is a very close link with propolis to homeopathy itself, because one of the chief remedies within homeopathy is actually called Apis mellifica. And it's extremely useful for a number of symptom-related illnesses, which we'll go into further detail in the upcoming shows, of course, when I cover some of the homeopathic remedies, the common ones that can be used. But James, until we meet again next time, thank you very much for sharing and imparting so much knowledge on propolis. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you very much, Atik.
Remember, you can shop all things propolis online at www.liketreatslike.co.uk, where you will find the highest quality immune support products manufactured right here in the UK. Just click on the immune support tab at the top of the site and you'll find all the propolis products available to buy, from Pure Honey, Oral Health Range, Skin Care Range, Whole Health Range and the Pollen Range. And whilst you're there, take a look at my blog section to find blogs on homeopathy and natural healthcare. And now it's time for reflection with poems of healing. This one is called In the Deepest Night. In the depth of the night, I thought of you. In those moments when the madness of the world overwhelms it, I wonder what truth we don't grasp, which from afar frightens you and for us saddens you. I thought of you yesterday, in the contagious panic that crushes our guts. I try to remember your soothing words, which with great tenacity would silence my anxieties. I thought of you again, when the silence around me became cumbersome, like a coup with no weapons, no stir, yet so full of sparkle. Tonight, I still think of you, you, source of me, I who feel you living in me, you who gave me life, I will always think of you. And I now am thinking of you. This poem was by Marlene Sanogo Matao, published in Sauti, Poems of Healing by the United Nations.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. Station that makes you feel good.
I do hope you've enjoyed the Homeopathy Health Show here on UK Health Radio, the world's number one talk health radio. Tune in next time for more things homeopathy, interviews, and segments on the healing possibilities that homeopathy can bring you. And don't forget to visit UK Health Radio online at www.ukhealthradio.com to see the many other amazing shows available to listen live and on demand. Or why not download the app from the iOS and Android stores? Until next time, stay safe and take care.